Hey, everybody. This is FinOps Fridays, our podcast hosted by Aptio and IBM, where we just try to talk FinOps. We try to get industry experts to share their wisdom, advice, experience, and also have a good time. Video stream live on LinkedIn, post to YouTube, and the audio is a little bit longer, and you can find that wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information, head over to Aptio.com. But for now, let's dive right into the podcast. Thanks for listening.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Hunter Willis, and you are watching FinOps Fridays. Today, we have Elise Baez on the line with us. Thanks for joining us today. She is an experienced FinOps trainer with over a decade of formal training, getting organizations onboarded with FinOps, getting them going with FinOps, and helping them mature it in their organizations. So, Elise, thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes. Hello. So I was kind of reflecting on where my journey started before joining this podcast. Thank you for having me. And I realized that it actually started sort of back in the technology business management world. For those of you that are very familiar with Aptio, now IBM, that kind of journey, I actually worked at Aptio a lifetime ago, it feels like. And from there, I did a couple of other IT pre-sales engineering kind of roles, and then wrapped into getting certified as a FinOps practitioner. And then I was lucky enough to be part of the beta group for the certification for FinOps professionals and helped kind of create that. So if you are new to the FinOps community and you are now looking at this whole FinOps framework with domains and capabilities, just know that actually ages ago, this was still being built and was still being created as we were learning how to manage our cloud spend and kind of remedy that with that traditional IT world. So yeah, that's my background.
Yeah, awesome. And as we were talking and the ramp up to this conversation, realized that I have two daughters and you now have two daughters. Congratulations.
I do. Thank you. Yes, for those of you that do not know, I'm sorry, I kept this one quiet. Her name is Zoe. And yeah, she's lovely. So now I now have two wonderfully rambunctious daughters.
It's so great. It's so great, man. I love being a dad of daughters. It's fantastic. Yeah. And again, thank you so much for coming on today. Really looking forward to this conversation. But before we dive into it, I want to go ahead and run through our rapid fire questions for you. Are you ready, Elise?
Ready.
All right. Mac or PC to start?
PC.
Okay. And Android or Apple?
Android.
Okay. Chat or email?
Chat.
Okay. Okay. Slack or Teams?
Slack.
Slack, okay. And do you like meetings online or in person better typically?
This is not fair because I work remote a lot because of my two children. So I say online for convenience sake. However, there's something about that energy of meeting in person. So I'm so sorry that that's a bit of a cop out. I'll say if I have
sure.
to online.
No, that's great. And are you like a morning person or more of a night owl?
Night owl.
And kind of in the same line, or are you coffee or tea person?
Both, because I've been living in the UK for 7 years, so I'm all for a cup of tea.
All right. That's great. And do you like the spring or fall? You prefer?
Spring.
Okay. Cake or pie?
Cake.
Okay. And my personal favorite question of this whole list, pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
All right. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
On the beach, go to the mountains, or take a tour when you go on vacation?
Beach.
All right. And I think this one I already know the answer to, but are you more introverted or extroverted?
Extroverted on good days. But
yeah. Extroverts have their days too, people. We're both extroverted, yeah. I think. But yeah. I definitely identify with that.
I definitely, especially with two children, have really appreciated my introverted time nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, so... there are a ton of different approaches, you know, and your primary role right now, what you're doing is helping organizations kind of onboard with FinOps or different teams within organizations onboard to an existing practice and helping them facilitate that. I also know that you are really passionate about helping teams within organizations evangelize FinOps to their stakeholders and to different business units and things like that. So talk to us about kind of how you get started with a variety of approaches with these organizations and like, what does that look like when you're really starting into kind of creating that formal FinOps functions for different kinds of organizations? I'm sure there's a lot of variance in there based on size and industry.
Absolutely.
And where they are, maturity.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my initial approach is always to gather as much information as possible, obviously as much as an organization is willing to share. Because the more transparency you can have, especially with the people that are the driving forces behind wanting to create a FinOps function, whether it's from the informal aspect or whether they actually have funding behind it and it's a really formal initiative, understanding where the knowledge and where, what background and mindset an organization already has is really crucial to then being able to decide what is going to be the most effective approach. Because exactly like you said, different organizations are going to, want to approach things in a different way. Even if you say, hey, this is what I've experienced as the most successful, that doesn't mean that's going to be approved. So what I have found is for the organizations where it's much more informal, they maybe don't necessarily have funding yet, and it's kind of coming from somebody not at the executive level of leadership trying to kind of get this FinOps fire going. What I have found is just being able to try and start with like smaller introductory, I'm going to educate, like cross-discipline people. And because the reason for that is because FinOps personas really can take a fair variety of skill sets and across different disciplines within an organization. So if you can reach out to maybe a few people that are really influential across a couple of teams that will be able to kind of pull those levers of FinOps, then you'll be able to start to spread the word organically. And then hopefully you can then start to say, okay, look, we have a really big desire, a big backing for this. We're starting to see the impact. And then you can really kind of grow it from there. Yeah, of course it's easier if there's already a mandate and there's already funding set aside. But if not, kind of that kind of organic, we're going to give people some small like lunch and learns or small internal trainings or what can we do to start to evangelize and get people interested in talking about it within their day to day.
And do you have a kind of a little bit more tactical advice for organizations, people like, I really like this kind of evangelization and like kind of winning stakeholders over conversations, because even in organizations that already have a mature practice, or like, let's say you have an organization, they do have a mandate for FinOps, right? But there's still going to be people in the organization or certain departments or like finance teams, for instance, that are like, well, we can help you with your FinOps thing, but when it comes to chargeback and showback, we're not budging. Right. Or
Fair
like
enough.
for these different aspects of it, we're not going to move at all. What is your, like, how do you approach from that organic perspective, helping people kind of break down those barriers specifically? Is that too tactical or is that a good question for
No,
you?
I think that makes a lot of sense. So one of the biggest things for me is to make sure that any collateral that you end up creating or that you want people to read and share is in a place where people go to frequently and often. So even if, for example, you have somebody in the organization that says, okay, the way that we currently do chargeback and showback, that's it. We're not going to change it. Even if that's the case, that doesn't mean that you can't, for example, start to create like temporary dashboards or like the hey, if we did it in a different way, it's kind of like that idea of hey, I'm gonna kind of show you a few other options. Let me also put it in the same place that you look at every single day, right? Like, for example, in the morning, I have my morning routine. If I haven't slept well, I will make my coffee. I will check my Outlook emails. I will, people have their routines of what they check. If you're an engineer, you're looking at Jira all the time if you use that, or if you're using Slack a lot internally, or if you're a Microsoft Teams person, right? Like you have those places that are kind of like your home base. And my hot, like highest recommendation for being able to really communicate, either hey, we need to be taking action, or oh, hey, this might be a good idea. Let's kind of draft this and see if this can take initiative on the next quarter or the next, whatever we're doing. Would be to place it somewhere where people will see it. So even if it is not, even if there's a full-on no, and you think it's a no, that doesn't mean that you can't say, hey, well, I'm just gonna place this here for you to just look at. Like
I like that. It's
we haven't
not
implemented
showback,
it.
it's budget optimization goals, right?
Yeah.
It's a totally different. This is that's not showback. No. Showback, not here. Just visibility. That's all it is. Right? Exactly.
I just
Okay.
realized how that could come off like fly FinOps ninja, like just.
No, but I have seen just every conversation I've ever had on this topic when we talk about the visualization, the surfacing information, et cetera. It's like, it's crucial because the business units that are consuming cloud, especially when we're talking about AI and the like, the cost jump that that causes with cloud resources and the demand for it for different teams and departments, they have no idea how much it's costing them. And if you don't show them and then show them why and how, they don't know, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's just, there are so many things that you can then improve upon from there. So even just like, for example, then being able to see what does my data quality look like. So you even said just like, even understanding a number is one thing, but understanding it in the context of what does it entail and then how can we actually act upon that? Is the number going up a good thing? Is it a neutral? Is it, you know, negative? I feel as if a lot of times it's really easy to get caught up in, say, the magnitude of a number without actually realizing, well, maybe we wanted that number to go up because it means that we shifted dollars or pounds or whatever our unit is from one application to somewhere else. And that's what we wanted to do. It's what we wanted to achieve. So I think it's really important to just be able to try and understand that. And if there are different ways of presenting that information to different, like, to different viewpoints within an organization, that's going to be very helpful, because one pane of glass view for, say, the finance teams that are interested in, say, those budgets is going to be really different than what the engineers want to see, and, you know, how the product teams want to be able to kind of measure successes and failures, right? So it's important to be able to try and shape those views to the best of your ability and then improve them over time.
And when you're training different teams, can you talk about how that affects, you know, your training and how you're approaching this with them, right?
Absolutely. So what I tend to do personally is I like to have persona-focused trainings. So I know that obviously if you go to learn.finops.org, there is a wide array now of trainings that are available that didn't exist several years ago. So I think it's great that there is now a standardized training certification out there. However, there's also kind of this idea of when it comes to the day-to-day practice, it can be really useful to have, you know, even if it's just like a 30-minute, hey, I'm going to onboard a team on what this new dashboard might look like that they can be, like I said, looking at every day. And what does it mean, right? So even if they look at it for 5 minutes per day or for, you know, that type of thing, just to kind of monitor the health of, say, I mentioned engineering teams. I speak engineer as my like default background. So apologies to those of you that's like finance or other personas that are just wondering why do I keep saying that. But it's just being able to say, hey, okay, this is now the health of how many tickets I've responded to, or here's the cost of that application that I spun up, or my networking costs, or what errors I'm looking, whatever that might be. Being able to then just have a small persona-based training to help also give people the opportunity to ask questions, or give people the opportunity to also then say, okay, in a week or two, let's come back. Let's have that same group of people come back after they've hopefully spent some time in it. And what improvements can we make to it? What did they want to see that they weren't able to see in that particular dashboard that they had, right? And you can do that with more than just the engineering team, even though I know I use that as an example.
Well, it's a great example too. And I would say, you know, from my understanding and the conversations I have with people, right, the finance and FinOps personas that are more gauged towards the actual like value and investment cycle as well as budgeting, talking to the engineers is really important from your perspective, because they don't know that the finance teams don't have any idea what they're talking about.
Exactly.
And that nomenclature and the terminology and taxonomy is busy work for them, but it's like, hey, if you want your budget to be approved, just like you said before, that documentation's got to be all in one place. It's got to make sense. Absolutely. Everybody's got to get on the same page, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that actually reminds me of one of the first times that I was sitting in as a FinOps person helping onboard in an organization where procurement was very heavily driving FinOps. And it opened my mind to the world of procurement that I didn't really have that much hands-on experience before. And I just absolutely was basically overrun with acronyms that I had never heard of before. And it's the same. I guarantee that that's probably what the finance personas feel about, you know, about the technology side of the house. And so it's really, like you said, it's important to, sometimes I've even seen teams just have like a little wiki page or whatever they might have with all of the kind of acronyms and what does it mean for that team? Like, so it's an easy quick back, easy kind of like, oh, I'm going to look at that up. And now I can understand what's happening. And now I can kind of read things without having to get a translator. You know, you don't want to have your one FinOps resource or your two FinOps resources translating everything within every single meeting. So,
no, and some of my favorite conversations about all of this have been around like organizational change management and principles of collaboration, and how a lot of times when people are going through a FinOps implementation, they kind of forget that the ability to deploy something or implement a program, there are separate practices that exist for that stuff that need to be applied here. And they're looking at FinOps and they're focusing on FinOps, but they kind of forget that, like, hey, this is the same kind of process as like a program manager would take to implement a program, right?
Exactly. And I think that that's important that you say that, because another nice example would be when I've helped organizations onboard FinOps that are very heavily ITAM focused. And I think it's great that now we have this kind of intersecting of disciplines kind of collateral within the FinOps community, because ITAM and FinOps have, you know, they have a strong synergy. And I really appreciated being able to learn from people that have been experts in the ITAM field, and then being able to introduce FinOps to them, and then see the looks on their faces when they're like, oh, I get it. That is very similar to what I've done here. And then to just kind of spark those conversations. And that way you are fostering that collaboration in a way that it makes it easy, instead of having to kind of push water up a hill and make it difficult and just kind of say, hey, here's a list of words and acronyms, you memorize it and learn it yourself, instead of kind of coming to meet people where, you know, the language that they're already familiar with. That's more helpful.
You know, and when we talked to Sean about the focus specification and some of the conversations that I've had with some other people in the FinOps world, and again, talking to different organizations that have implemented it, there is this, there's also this persona of kind of the data warehouse people.
Yes.
That is where it's kind of where the rubber meets the road when it comes to taxonomy and the tagging and everything that's going on with the IT asset management and the other things that are happening with FinOps, and like the what and the why of so much of this stuff. And also, again, where the data is stored, right? And a lot of times people just completely leave them out of this, of everything that's going on. And they turn around and the way everything is structured has changed. And they're like, hey, you know.
Yeah. I have a soft spot for anybody that brings up data warehouses or databases, because my first kind of foray into the IT world was at a database connectivity company. And and the language for every single database, whether it's big data, normalized data, JSON data, all of that. I mean, everything comes down to it. And they have their own, like you said, taxonomies for each one, and querying that data and the costs behind it. And yeah, that is absolutely a persona or a group of people that hopefully don't get left out of these conversations, because they hold the keys to some very expensive resources within our IT world.
Yeah. And with data lakes and AI, that process and the quality of a query can, you know, it's kind of like Kubernetes has already kind of surfaced the quality of kind of how we're interacting with the technology and how that can expound costs. But when you talk about AI and data lakes, it's at a whole nother level, you know?
Yes. Like, because the time it takes, I used to, I remember I used to help like troubleshoot or try and optimize certain queries for different databases, and literally just do like performance testings where you'd be like, okay, let's see how this database does trying to extract this type of information. How quickly can we do it? How quickly can we surface it? Can we, you know, can we put like, what can we do to make it better? And I specifically remember hitting memory issues, or, you know, when you really get to that point where you realize, okay, this is reams and reams of data that is probably going to be costing a fortune if I'm running this all of the time, or if I'm breaking things because I'm taking too long to query information. That we have a problem.
And so that's, I almost feel like, as we move forward with AI, you know, that we need to be talking about the quality of data queries and the quality of data more, because it's going to dramatically impact costs. And when something is sitting there processing and can't You know, complete a query. It's like, yeah, that's using resources to do that, right?
Absolutely. And the worst bit is when somebody, if you don't think about it, if you just kind of go, oh, this query will work, and then you just leave it and you forget it. And if it breaks, or if it brings back information, but like you said, the quality, it brings back the incorrect information or brings back so much information that is not useful, then, you know, those are all things that can not only be costly from a monetary perspective, but from a time perspective, which is massive for performance and for just kind of customer satisfaction. So, yeah.
Okay. And so to bring us back out of the weeds on this topic, which has been amazing, by the way, this is great. So what we were talking about is effectively trying to get as many different personas involved, both from the business side, which I feel like we talk about a lot in the community and stuff, is like making sure the business units are involved and they have access to the visibility they need for their consumption of costs, but also from the IT side, these personas that are not often thought about, right? Or sometimes they get left out of the conversation, but they're dramatically impacted and also can contribute to cost optimization and process efficiency, right?
Absolutely.
Can you dive into a little bit about how this affects the capabilities as well? Like things like, you know, when we're talking about total cost of operations and bringing in kind of the on-premises story too a little bit here, especially for allocation and like containers and AI and what's going on with that, as well as like unit economics and sustainability and all these different things that are happening.
Absolutely. So I would say when you can educate like kind of those non-core personas as much as possible, it will definitely help kind of strengthen other business cases. So for example, I'll take sustainability as the first one because I have done some work when it comes to kind of being able to how can we measure carbon footprint to an extent, or, you know, and I say how and to an extent just because I know that it's still an evolving discipline. And as far as the quality from that perspective, it, depending on which cloud service provider, you can get into kind of debates as far as how well are things measured. However, the point is sustainability from an IT perspective has not been something that has been at the top of people's minds for at least like not as much as it has been recently. So it's something where if you are talking to somebody that is, say, for example, focused just on their data warehouses or focused on, say, their applications and just kind of making sure that they are pushed out to customers. And then you say, hey, we would like to try and measure what does this look like from a sustainability perspective? We're going to try and add in this new KPI to reach. There might be some question marks around that. So I would say that the education around kind of being able to just build a simple, start off with like a simple equation for how are we going to measure it? How are we going to just start monitoring it? How are we going to start measuring that data and collecting that data will be very helpful. And then that can be impactful. And then you can kind of say, okay, we are going to at least, we're now somewhere versus nowhere when it comes to even just measuring what is our impact to the environment look like. So that's just one example. But I do think that there are now a lot of non-core or non-foundational capabilities that can be impacted within an organization that we didn't really consider before. Which is nice to see. Nice to see that the FinOps approach is being kind of shared across an organization and across the communities.
Yeah, I mean, and when we're talking about overall optimization of costs, you know, when you're bringing in, I mean, we would be remiss if we didn't touch on what is always referenced as being, you know, the most difficult capability within FinOps, getting engineers to take action, right, on optimization, right sizing, et cetera. For resources and getting to getting engineers in a place where they are in the loop and taking proactive steps, right? Mm-hmm. It's like shift left in the development cycle approach that's talked about, as well as the other thing I wanted to touch on is like unit economics is like,
yes,
organizations across the board. It feels like that's kind of the holy grail of organizations want to go, being able to have a value metric associated with the optimization of costs.
Yeah, it used to be called, I remember it used to be called FinOps Nirvana. And so for unit economics, what I really love is that there is now that library of kind of metrics and that you can find within the FinOps.org website, which I think is great. And it's so helpful to be able to find a place where there are examples that are given for how can I create unit metrics? How can I, like, maybe, the other thing that I always think about is that quote of when given a number, ask for another number, because that's kind of the whole basis behind, hey, if I want to have unit metrics and unit economics, like what am I looking at? What does that even mean? What is the health of this measurement, and how is it meaningful to my business? And I think that being able to take a look at other examples that are already made publicly available is one of the easiest starting points for organizations that haven't started to kind of measure themselves in that way. So I always recommend, hey, don't try and invent the wheel if you don't have to. Within an organization, I always say, hey, here's what I have found that has been successful. It's already, publicly available as examples for what other organizations have done. If any of these things apply to you, great. Take that, start using that calculation and start looking at what does that look like internally on a day-to-day basis for your organization. If none of them apply to you, then maybe at least you can look at it and say, okay, I've got something tangential that might work that I can kind of tailor and taper. But at least then you're not looking at a blank screen, because I have had writer's blocks days where you just are looking at that blank screen, and you just sometimes it's nice to have something to reference to help get you started.
Sure. Yeah, there's so much to do. It's hard to know what to, like, where to hit the hammer on any given day. That's
Yeah.
a lot. Well, Italy, this has been an amazing conversation. I want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything, like, any advice or any other topics that you want to dive into really quick before we start to wrap things up? Is there anything else that you have as, like, a passion topic that you want to talk about before we kind of spin down here?
Maybe I'm bringing this up because it's top of mind at the moment, because I just went through the recertification process. But I would say that I'm just really proud of anybody that has gone through the FinOps professional certification. And I just want to give each and every person that has done that just kind of a quick little round of applause and a well done, you did it. Or if you're working towards your certification because you were part of that first cohort, I just want to tell you, you can do it. Just give you some confidence. But yeah, I would say that as far as discussing more things, I think I'm really passionate about just also career growth. Because I don't always see myself as a mentor in my career. Sometimes I always am still kind of looking for mentors. But I have had the privilege of some kind of more junior people in their careers reach out to me for advice, or for mentorship. And I may not always have as much time as I wish I used to now that I'm a mom of two, but I do always appreciate anybody that reaches out for advice, and I'm always happy to help. And if I can't help, I'm happy to hopefully share with other people in the community that I know are also happy to help, because I think that everybody goes through their own career journey, and I think it behooves us all to kind of support each other through it. So that's
Yeah,
something
and
I'm passionate about.
thank you for being so active in the community. I know that you're on, like, the Three Keys webcast with Steph Gooch there. You did an episode with that, and you've done good presentations with the FinOps Foundation. So people, look out for Italy's content out there. Definitely check out some of those sessions and some of those other conversations that she's had. And also great posts on LinkedIn too. A lot of good advice, a lot of good link sharing and stuff like that there. So thanks for being so active with all of that.
Of course.
Yeah, and just before we sign off, is there anything else that you want to say? And just really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, I think I'm all set. I just want to say thank you. This has been really fun. I've really enjoyed it, and yeah, I appreciate being able to chat about some of these topics that I'm really passionate about.
Absolutely, for sure. And folks, definitely don't forget to check out the learn.finops.org as referenced, and so much of the content, some of the information and resources that we've referenced today at finops.org. Definitely, if you haven't refreshed yourself on the framework or checked out the latest framework, as well as what's going on with the Focus Foundation, definitely recommend you check that out. And also, from the IBM Cloudability side, our FinOps team, we've released an ebook on the FinOps maturity capabilities and kind of how to strategically understand kind of moving the maturity for capabilities forward and some recommendations around that as well, because we find that, like, when you're talking about the phases of FinOps and the different capabilities and the maturity at the capability level for FinOps, it can kind of get confusing. How do you strategize that? There's also a really great presentation from FinOpsX last year, not this past year, but from 2024, that dives into that as well. So check out that content. It really dives into some of the concepts that we've talked about today. Everybody, Eliz, thank you again. And everybody, thanks for your time today. Take care and hope you enjoy the episode. Steph.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this episode of FinOps Fridays. If you have any FinOps questions or questions about the podcast, reach out to us at FinOpsFridays@aptio.com. You can also find more information at the website there as well. We're also really active on social media. So hope that you like, subscribe to our content. And if you have any questions, you can also comment there. Hope to see you next time. Hope you have a good one until then.